Welcome to the Work Dynamics Podcast, your source for information related to modern business workflows. I am your host, Scott Williams, along with my co-host, Grant Bifolci. Today's topic, key elements to enabling lean correspondence management. Grant, we have a lot to cover today. It seems as though that we have obviously hit a chord, I will say, with a lot of the folks that follow Work Dynamics. And whether it's lean government or lean enterprise, it is definitely a topic of conversation of interest and something that I think a lot of companies are, one, struggling with, and two, are working towards a solution for, in the sense of implementing a lean environment. So what I would like to do today with you, if you're okay with this on our podcast, is I'd like to go through, I'm going to say, you know, nine or so very specific scenarios within the idea of lean government, lean enterprise, so that folks get an idea of perhaps even, like, we'll call this a to-do list, in the sense that these are things that people, you know, can make notes on and start to create their own plan with kind of the key elements around how to get the whole lean environment up and rolling. Sound good to you?
That sounds great.
So this will be a little bit of a different podcast. Usually you and I rant and rave about stuff. This is actually, we're getting into the nitty gritty on some things and giving people the some actual action items. So I'm going to start off with one here that is a, and these are, by the way, I'm going to put these in alphabetical order. Let's do that. So it's just that way it makes it kind of easy to go through. One of the big things is, and, you know, I can definitely speak to this because of a couple things. It both affects me both personally as well as professionally, but accessibility. Accessibility across the board for so many organizations is becoming imperative, both from an equity perspective, an inclusivity perspective, as well as a legal perspective. And, you know, obviously it's that, you know, no company should be excluding anyone just due to, you know, something like visual impairment. How difficult, like, have you seen it for companies or government organizations, those kind of things, to tackle accessibility in that sense in systems? Like, is it just something that's non-existent that you feel like, especially in, like, you know, the CCM world, those kind of things? What's your experience on that one?
Well, I think over the course of time, we're becoming more aware of what needs to change. I think the difficulty with respect to accessibility comes to the definition of accessibility and related to the applications that you're using. So, you know, it's one thing to go on a restaurant website and to be able to say, I want to have high contrast, or I want to expand to 150% so that I can read my menu a little better. You know, an outward-facing website where typically the WCAG stuff really applies. And then compare that to a business mission-critical application, which requires a lot of information input, a lot of field sizing, so on and so forth. So are those business applications bound by the same level of compliance with respect to accessibility than, say, a restaurant website? And that really becomes a challenge, because depending on how intense your application is, the user experience there, it becomes a lot more difficult to be able to meet those guidelines, and it can be very tough, especially when you're talking about integrating with other applications. So if you're bringing stuff into your stuff, if you're bringing user experience into your user experience, then you have to also have WCAG compliancy in the secondary application or what you're bringing in. And that could be as simple as a viewer, it could be integrating with a financial system, you know, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. So you're only as good as your weakest link, and your weakest link doesn't have that compliancy or accessibility, then you run into a secondary challenge that's not your own.
And I would say to add to that, is, and I absolutely agree with everything you said. I think to put a pin in the accessibility side of things is that obviously, you know, there's WCAG, there's AODA, there's 508, and like whatever the legal aspects go on this as far as like, you know, different countries and the like as well. I think what it really comes down to from a compliance perspective to me is that make sure that the solution one that you're choosing for your correspondence management and the like, make sure the base platform is compliant. And then from there, from a compliance perspective, also, as you said, that's when you start getting into ensuring that, you know, if you're moving towards a lean environment, is that there is also all the other extra platforms that connect into it, whether that's finance, it could be, you know, it could be Salesforce, it could be, you know, all of these different things, whether it's even intranets, extranets, you know, corporate websites, those kind of things that may tie in from an ingest perspective as well, as making sure that is there, and then ensuring that there's obviously tools for authoring and the like that, you know, ensure that PDFs, those kind of things are compliant as well, which is, again, sort of an amalgamation of different platforms that connect into one another, or at least, you know, you're using to make sure that you move on to that. Let's get into another one here, because this is a really big one, because this starts to get into, well, one, compliance, obviously, we'll kind of, you know, go from accessibility and the compliance thing into compliance and where that moves out into the rest of the world, as well as everything from finance to communications to all these things, which is auditing and reporting in general. You know, it's that automated recording and time stamping of every system action as from an omnipotent perspective. Grant, give me your insight on this, because I know that that's, again, the analytics side of things is something that's, you know, or well, the auditing portion before we even get into analytics is really important on how you report to different organizations, different governing bodies, those kinds of things.
So can you define that a little more for me, what you're asking me?
Yeah, absolutely. So like when it comes to auditing and reporting, is that there's obviously, you know, there's the analytics side of things in this and business intelligence and that kind of stuff for sure.
Yeah.
But it's creating actual reports that are meaningful, that are easy to create. And I think maybe that's like where we should probably focus, is that, say, for instance, you're a compliance person and you need to ensure that you're auditing and reporting to your own department, to outside agencies, whatever it may be, is one, the reports are accurate.
Yeah.
That's kind of a big one. And two, it's not taking you, you know, 3 months to put together a report because you don't have the tools to be able to do it in a lean manner, a quick manner, let's start there.
Okay. So it's interesting because it's this is one of those areas that when we talk about reporting and we talk about configuring an application or putting a process in place, oftentimes people try and mimic their business process, and reporting is kind of an offshoot of that. And they get to the area where they start figuring out how they're going to report all this information. And yes, the data is accurate, but the data is not in a format that allows them to report in the manner they need to report in. And so typically when I have a conversation with a client or anybody from a consulting perspective, if they're talking to me about putting a business application in place, the first thing that I ask is, what are you trying to data mine out of this? How do you want to report on this? What are you expecting to see? What kinds of reports do you need to have available? Because that really sets the tone for the ingestion of data into the application. If you can't report on it the way you set it up, then you're really befuddling yourself with respect to building an application. So the most important aspect is the reporting. It doesn't do anything for me if I'm capturing all this data and at the end of the day I can't report on what I need to be able to report on. So give me your reports, help me identify the fields, help me understand what you're trying to capture, how you're trying to capture it. Let's make sense of it from an output perspective, and then let's garner the methodology for input and inclusion of data into the system so that we can meet those qualifications.
And I would assume that the, you know, there's two sides of this fence, right? Is there's the before and after of, I don't have a document management platform. Well, best of luck, right? Because that's like, I mean, if you're going to try to move into a lean environment, a lean scenario, is that you need obviously the tools to do it. So, okay, so you implement a document management platform. It's really, if I understand what you're saying, it's understanding the who, what, where, when, why, how, right? Is that there's all these different compliance, I'll call it even standards and sort of like, you know, like industry regulations where, you know, it's garnering that actionable insight. Like there's, you know, the location, there's your where, right? It's like where does this stuff reside? Who's working on it from where? Those kind of things. Security is obviously a big one. You know, management of the data and sort of the subsequent like communication side of things. Or just like, you know, this like difficulty, I'll say, around enforcement due to all of this, like, you know, sort of disparate data. Like there's, you know, like, because that's one of the things I think you were, you know, probably leaning towards as well, is that it's how do you get all of this stuff connected in a way that makes sense on and in an easy fashion, as opposed to, because like, look, we've all met those very, you know, the poor compliance folks out there that I feel for, where it's the, yeah, a report that if we had a document management platform in place with everything that is, you know, so I have my compliance reporting, I can audit workflows, I can control all the access to content, I can manage any document type, I've got all my analytics stuff, I've got, you know, processing accuracy, all of those kinds of things. Yeah, if I could run a report and be like, well, there you go. Or there's the other side of it. It's like, well, give me 6 months and I hope it's accurate because it'll be out of date by the time it's done. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really the reality that we live in now, because things move so quickly that it becomes difficult in the sense of, you know, truly the, like, how do you keep up, I guess, right? So let's talk about even, like, let's move into sort of the flip side of this, which is directly connected, which is the BI kind of side of things and analytics, because it's obviously you need that continual visibility. Without a document management platform, how do you do that? Can you do that? I don't think you can, really.
It becomes really difficult to try and manage it without having some sort of tool in place, to be honest.
And does it then roll down, because I know that we've ranted and raved about this kind of stuff, I will say, in previous podcasts, is that now you're going down that road of, well, you could have implemented a platform, that'd be super easy, but instead you went down the road of, well, I'm going to hire developers.
Yeah.
We're going to do some, you know, coding magic and, you know, throwing around terms like AI and this kind of stuff, and it's, yeah, you're stuck with, you know, your own personal hell, for one, because now your organization, whether or not you're a company or government, is also now a software application development firm that needs to keep this thing up and running continually. And that can be a deep, dark hole, can it not? Like,
absolutely. I remember reading an article on a piece of software that was purchased by one of the large companies. I shouldn't say purchased by, it was provided by, purchased for clients. And the number on this particular piece of software was, for every dollar invested in the software, they spent $8 managing it, administering it. So it's you think, okay, great, you know, we're getting a deal, we're buying a really great product here, and then it costs you eight times that just to utilize it with any sort of effectiveness. So yeah, it can be really expensive. There's a couple of different things that have come into play with what you said. One is, I generate a report, and literally as soon as I hit the print button or the report button, it is now obsolete. Mm-hmm. Unless everybody stops using the system to enter any data, because the data is now off by however many records you've entered between the time you printed it and the time you evaluate it. And so the accuracy of those things is really not 100%. In every sense, there's a variation by some degree. So that's interesting about how that works. The second part to that is that, you know, I remember in a statistics class I took, and basically the professor said something along the lines of, you can tell any story with statistics, no matter how accurate or not. So, it's a complete way to lie any position by using statistics. So if you are generating reports that reflect a certain way, the nature of the report can either cover up or present potential problems, right? And so the nature of the report is also very important in trying to garner some level of non-biased position on those reports. So it really comes down to how you want to report, what you're trying to say, what you're actually trying to present as far as data. That's also a big player in how those reports are perceived.
Right. And the thing is with analytics too, is that like there's, you know, you start with something where it's the importance of this, especially in this day and age, right? It's that like everything is moving so fast, right? Like, as you said, like, you know, your report is only as good as the minute that you print it, because 30 minutes after that, there could be, in a big organization, we're talking hundreds, if not thousands of documents that are, you know, out in the ether, so to speak. So, you know, it's things like, you know, like visibility into things like what? Document status, transparency, user accountability, scheduling, management, like all of those things that are these moving parts move at the speed of modern business and kind of that digital environment now. So the idea of not having, you know, you're not going to be able to get into the lean scenario of anything unless you have the right platform in place, really is the. But let's move on to that, because there's also, and this is kind of, I guess, the perfect segue to this, even though it's in alphabetical order, continual insight. Right? Like, I mean, and that's, I think, touches very much on what you were, you know, alluding to as well, is that instantaneous thing that, like, insight has to be continuous. Like, there is no, you know, it's yeah, there's, like, notifications to ensure, like, deadlines are being met, obviously, like, yeah, there's continual insight there, but it goes far beyond that as far as continual insight, as far as what people need in this environment. So, you know, again, what's your experience on that portion of trying to maintain continual insight without a document management platform or implementing a lean infrastructure?
Yeah, I think without having a proper platform in place that allows things like notifications, like dashboards, any of those types of bits of information that provide the employee or the person tasked to do something, you know, it becomes them having to kind of try and find things that are either now assigned to them, now they're working on these things. It does require a lot of time and effort to maintain that efficiency. When you put a document management system in place that says, hey, Scott just finished with this, and now it's assigned to you, and here it is, and all you have to do is push a button to link right to it so I can go do my work. Yeah, it seems a little bit brain dead from a transfer perspective, but it's the most efficient way to transfer information person to person, place to place, process to process. So those types of things are incredibly valuable. If I can go into a document management system or a document platform, and when I launch the application, it gives me a dashboard of all of the things that are on my plate and for me to work on, it's twofold, really. It provides an assurance that I have the right things that I have to work on capable and right in front of me, but also, it gives me a sense of satisfaction that I'm actually triggering some of those things and I'm getting those things removed from my inbox and I'm moving them on to the next cog in the wheel. So, you know, as silly as it sounds, we all grew up with the notion that you get a star on your paper if you do a good job. And part of a platform will allow you to see that you've completed this much work in this much time frame, ahead of schedule, on schedule, behind schedule. So it gives you a real feedback on how you're performing and what you're accomplishing, as well as for your managerial side, who can then look and see how the team's performing, how the manager's performing. I mean, the accuracy of those kinds of platforms allows for a lot of data outside of just the data that we're gathering, right? It helps us understand our business processes. Are our business processes true? If they're not true, what do we have to change to make them more efficient? How do we manage those efficiencies, utilization of staff, et cetera, et cetera? Like, all of those things come into play to make lean government or lean enterprise or lean however, just to lean up your processes, make the solution you have in place, make your organization be a lot more effective. So that's really the value in these types of applications. Employee satisfaction, employees can see how they're doing, managers can see how they're doing. There's real-time metrics on performance and efficiencies all the way up to the CEO level who says, okay, great, this is what we're accomplishing and this is how much we're spending to do it. So there's a lot of real value in the data here outside of just capturing the data. It's also how you manage your processes and your efficiencies. What are your KPIs?
And that obviously right? If you can't measure it, you can't manage it.
That's
really what it comes down to. Let's go on to something also that, I mean, this is something that's, of course, imperative in 2022 and beyond. And not to go down a giant cybersecurity, you know, rabbit hole or anything, but controlled access to content. That is something that is, whether you're in a corporate environment, a government environment, maintaining that access to content and knowing who's looking at what and when is really important. And I think a lot of the times, you know, when people think cybersecurity, they think of the external threats of, you know, the stereotypical black hoodied guy leaning over the laptop trying to hack into stuff. It's not what it's about at all. I mean, controlled access to content can just literally be the wrong people seeing the wrong stuff, you know, and or being able to share something inadvertently that shouldn't be shared, those kind of things. Give me some insight into that, Grant, because I know that, like, you know, a lot of the customers that we work with and that you're in direct contact with are very large government, large enterprise, those kind of things. Maybe let's do the flip side. What are some of the horror stories that you've heard of not having control of access to content?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're all aware of the stories. I mean, you know, without getting into too much detail on the horror side.
Change the names to protect the guilty.
There exactly. You know, we're all aware, and we're probably all guilty of it at some point, sending an email to somebody who we think we're sending it to, but for some reason it turns out to be the wrong person. And, it, you know, I mean, it's just you enter a name, you type the first three letters, it comes up. I'm trying to send something to Scott, and I go click Scott, and I realize it was the wrong Scott. And yep. If you're using a document management platform, typically, I mean, you still interact with email in that way, but a lot of times it's notifications and triggers we're sending to the person to go link into the application. They still have to go through passwords and all those protected environments. If we're managing our data on Excel spreadsheets and email and C drives, which a lot of organizations who don't put document management platforms in place do, there is always the possibility. I mean, we can get past the point of hackers. The hackers happen wherever hackers happen. But it's the non-hacker release of information by accidentally sending an email out. And I will tell you that I was approached by a board of a public health organization to be a participant on their board, and the corporate secretary mailed out the invitation, but it, instead of BCCing all of the people that had applied for this position or had either registered or being acknowledged as potential candidates, she put it in the CC. So I've got this invitation to participate in this board, and I can see all of the other people that showed interest or were considered or wanted to be considered for this thing. And immediately she tried to retract that. And I thought that's kind of egg on your face, because a lot of that information would have been very private for people to, you know, we're talking major players in the community, politicians, whoever.
Sure.
You know, all of a sudden it's like, oh, this guy was trying to get on that board and didn't get selected. You know, it just so happens he was the, you know, whatever you want to call him, the second to the prime minister. And he wanted to get on that board. He didn't make it. So that's kind of a very negative tale to tell, all by a simple slip of CC versus BCC. And
well, you also just shared everyone's email with everyone else.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. These are upstanding citizens, very political, very private, very high-end business folks. And guess what? I now have email to all of them. So if I want to turn around and do a sales pitch, I've just got another 200 people to send it to. So, exactly. You know, so really, really black eye. And it's just a mistake, you know. Mm-hmm. And the flip side is, on the other side, you know, without the proper venting of a document platform or whatever it may be, all you have to do is leave something open on your desktop and somebody sends it, attach an email, send it to the wrong people, attach a file that's on your C drive, or your C drive gets compromised and you have a problem. Or you don't have any levels of protection, you don't have any checks and edits, you can't validate whether somebody did it or not. There's also the, oh, how did the newspaper get this particular bit of information? Well, we have no way to tell who offloaded that. And there's always covert ways around it, but a document management platform gives you a lot more control in being able to audit it after the fact and find out where the leak was. So there's just all of those aspects that really work towards a comfort level about having privacy in your data.
Well, and let's face it, for whether you're government or you know, we'll get into like the publicly traded companies, those kinds of things as well, right? Is that there are, you know, very much, you know, a level of compliance that you need to hit to ensure that there are certain people that are in the know and not in the know of certain transactions and those kind of things that need to, you know, always be controlled and maintaining that control to access based on level within an organization is obviously going to be imperative. Just to, you know, the financial ramifications too could be huge.
Yeah, like it, you know, it doesn't take much for somebody to send out the wrong note about something to do with a shareholder portfolio or a stock position or whatever it may be for a publicly traded company that all of a sudden changes the whole dynamics of how their shares trade. And the next thing you know, you have the SSC or whoever it may be, the compliance bodies all over you because you let out a little bit of information somehow, whether it be accidental or not, that actually affected, you know, share price, and that becomes a huge issue. So, so it's not just government; it's very much the private sector as well.
Well, here's just a really quick example before we move on to our next point: is that I know of companies that have had issues where. And it's the exact same thing that you were talking about is that, say, for instance, like the IT team, you know, is, you know, discussing a security issue within a piece of software that needs to be fixed right away because it could lead to a potential breach of customer data or something. But it's this is an average conversation happening within, you know, a dev team saying, hey, we were doing a, you know, running a pen test on something and we realized that a piece of code needs to be updated. Yeah, that code is probably going to be updated and fixed within 24 hours because it becomes a priority level scenario of which the dev team has to fix. But it was sent to one wrong person on an email thread and suddenly, you know, that company that could be a massive software company and platform company, their stock price drops by 20% because now it's like it hits the press. There's a massive security pull and potential data leak scenario happening. And then it opens it up to, you know, the the black hats out there that are going to try to attack that. Like, there's so many different scenarios of making sure that you have controlled access is, like, to content is imperative. So we live in a digital world, obviously, and it's if I asked you today what your, you know, preferred mode of documentation and things are as far as, you know, submitting to different, whether it's, you know, corporate or government sites, ingestion and routing of all document types. What does all document types mean, right? Is that there is, this is like when we start getting into to records and attachments and making sure they're being forwarded to the appropriate person or groups or whatever that may be, that is not just a form on a website. That is, it's just not. Like anyone that knows anything about the development behind these things, it's like, it's, you know, sending an attachment through of any kind and ensuring that it can be, you know, read on the opposite end of that, you know, from the catcher's mitt scenario of when it lands in that glove. Can it? Yeah, PDF, sure. Word docs, sure. But then it's like, I receive stuff on a daily basis that are like the weirdest, like text file stuff and like with that I've never even heard of. That right. I literally have to go out on the internet and find something that can open it. And so, yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, so you get into that kind of thing. What does a document management platform do for you in that particular case versus me that has to go out on the internet and find a program to open the document, convert it, and all the rest?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is there's no limitation on what can be put in play, right? Mm-hmm. And so what, as a document management platform, what you're trying to do is figure out, you know, what are the top 200, for example, things that someone might send? And you're looking for viewers and you're looking for, you know, connectivity pieces of software that will allow you to bring that information over. By the way, you know, let's not forget that if I'm using a proper document management platform and I want to put a Word document in there for you to see, I also have to scramble the naming convention in some way so that as this document moves from my desk to your desk electronically, I also want encryption on that and the file name. So because the only way to really make sure it's secure is not to pass a Word document or a PDF over the, you know, over the sky to somebody. So we want to encrypt that, encrypt the fact that it's a PDF, land it on the other side, and then be able to open up that encrypted document to be able to support the native application. So there's a whole other level in there of security. But it's the challenge can be, like you said, is you get all these text files, you get all these different kinds of bits of information, and we try and support as many as we can. Then we have to allow for the native application to take control of that, which is very difficult from a web perspective because you don't control the desktop. So it becomes somewhat of a challenge to have all of those different things. A document management platform sources to try and put those to bed as much as possible. It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be perfect. And if you get to a document, a CAD drawing or something, you know, that's really kind of extraneous as far as what most people would use, you know, if you download that document on your desktop and you have the native application, then you can open it. You can also do what you suggested, go out and search for something that will find a tool that will open it. But from a document platform, we try and take the majority of those into account so that it's seamless to the user.
Well, I think it's also like, I mean, in this particular case, like let's use CAD drawings as an example. You had mentioned this before, is that, and we're actually going to get into this in the few last ones we're covering here, but so it's a good segue maybe into this kind of scenario too, is that when you start to implement your the workflows that obviously, you know, need to be there for your type of company. If your type of company or organization, even like within the government, whatever, knows that it has to ingest CAD drawings, obviously that is going to be something that is accounted for within the document management platform and the ingest tools applied to it to ensure that those also can be, you know, like the security protocols can be applied to it and encryption and those kind of things as it flies around the cloud. and landing again, you know, routed to the right people, correct?
Right.
So,
yeah.
So let's talk about two at once here, because this is something that, you know, is I think in a lot of ways kind of goes hand in hand. One, we have the, and this is a term that's used, I'd say, a lot now. There's, you know, there's code, low code, and no code. I think there it's imperative to understand the difference for those that are looking to implement a lean environment, because code and even low code is not no code.
Right.
No code is very important, because no code means that you are not placing undue burden on even internal team members in a lot of ways to suddenly become coding experts in a certain platform, and it gets into the customization thing and that, like, that kind of stuff. It's like, you can have customization, absolutely. You can have, you know, also your, you know, it's the ability to make sure that it's like everything meets your expectations, but without, when I say customization, I don't mean spending millions and millions of dollars on customization. It's you know, it's really about the idea of configuring a system the way that you want it, because all the configurations have been done a million times over within a platform, and it's simply a matter of you know, making it happen in the way that you want it to happen, but it's already there, if you would.
Yeah.
So what's your experience on that? And I know that we've talked a lot about, you know, the benefits of no code versus code and low code. You know, maybe again, you know, give me a horror story on the code and low code scenario versus the you know, no code ability to customize something to your liking without truly going down an expensive customization path.
Yeah, I mean, the no code has, and I'm going to start the opposite way with this a little bit, but no code has its limitations potentially, okay, in the sense that if you're not coding, it's all configuration. So we don't typically, in a no code environment, we don't typically use customization, because customization really specifies more built for a client specifically. Mm-hmm. So configuration of a no code platform potentially has some limits, in the sense that it may not do exactly what you want it to do. Does it do 99%? Maybe. Does it do 95%? Maybe. It's really trying to find a platform that is configurable enough to allow for your deltas or your variances in from what your business process to what you want to have done, or what the application can support, is minimalistic as possible. The other side of that is we can get into coding and we can get into low code. And the problem with that is that typically the application can't support changes after the fact. In a configuration environment, we can always reconfigure. And that's usually pretty quick to do it, because the application supports those kind of intellects. In a coding environment, the more you code, the more it becomes difficult and onerous and time-consuming and less efficient to make changes and adjustments to the application. And you can't do that on the fly. You can't do it without having development involved, all of those types of things. The problem is that when we understand what the business requirements are to do the development work, the minute we start coding, we're actually obsolete already. And it doesn't mean that we're completely obsolete. It means that we're moving away from whatever business process we have as it evolves from what we have as a finite point to begin. And so that's really the challenge with coding an application. Unless you have constant improvement, constant development effort, constant customization, your application will move away from the business process in eventuality, and typically that happens faster than you think. The other side to that is that everybody thinks they know their business processes very well, and they typically don't, and there's a lot of hidden obstacles in there, and so people think, well, this will work out great, and then they start building an application, and if they don't have a clear understanding of what the results are and how they want to have the application work, there's always things that pop up. It's like trying to build your kitchen around your sink. It doesn't work. You have to have a good understanding of the entire scope of what you want to have in your kitchen before you start building it. Otherwise, you're fraught with disaster. Certain things don't fit. Certain things don't work as expected. Oh, we can't get there from here. And so that happens a lot. And, we have lots of examples of that, whether it be government or private sector, where organizations have started something with good intention, and they start to build and they get most of the way into it. A lot of money spent and it doesn't turn into what they had hoped it would. And, we have those examples, and we hear about them more often in the government versus non-government, but the gun registry, $100 million spent on the gun registry that never actually came to play. There's those types of things that pop up, and I'm not slagging government. We just don't hear about it in the private sector, but it happens in the private sector, just as much.
I think one of the things there's an interesting flip side to this that I think a lot of organizations, when moving towards a lean environment, that they don't consider. And I alluded to this at the beginning. It's I like the way that you mentioned too. So a configurable platform will take care of 99% of the stuff that you want, maybe even 95% of the stuff you want.
Yeah.
Okay. But on the flip side of that, as you said, is a lot of companies, or organizations, government, whatever it may be, a lot of people tend to struggle with this idea of what the workflow actually is or what is intended from that workflow. And the one thing with a configurable scenario, like our platform, I will say this because it's just because we do this for so many companies on both sides of the spectrum as far as enterprise and government, is that you now fall into a category of, we've done this as a company a million times. Work Dynamics unto itself, I'll say this from a configurable perspective, we've peered under the hoods of a lot of organizations. Yep. And in a platform scenario, we see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the reason why a platform, an evergreen platform that is configurable, is always being augmented in a way and growing in a way that is continually adopting the newest best practices as it pertains to the digital world that is continually evolving around us. Again, it goes back to that, the code and no code, that's not doing that. So even if, say, for instance, today, you say, I'm going to, quote unquote, make the sacrifice of going with a configurable platform versus a coded platform, the configurable platform most likely is going to solve that 5% or even 1% based on insight that you may not have, because it's not what you necessarily do for a living. Unless you develop your entire life is based around working with giant organizations and implementing best practices when it comes to document management. In your spare time, do you build document management platforms? No. People are siloed within their work, obviously, and for good reason, and that's why they become really, really good at it, right? It's that 10,000 hours, 100,000 hours scenario with a specific vocation that makes people really good at their jobs. I think that's where somebody has to take into consideration these customizable platforms versus the configurable platforms, perhaps, as we look at code versus no code, is that the no code is addressing most likely everything that you want it to address, but it's a situation of you don't know what you don't know until you know it. And Then there's an enlightenment scenario going, oh my God, yeah, you know what? These guys actually totally have this down.
Yeah.
So it's I think there's that too. And it's now this goes into the last two points, and then we'll close this out, which is, I think there's the integration aspect and there's the unsiloed workflow aspect. And if we look at integration, I think that's an easy one to check off. And I think it really plays into the the configurable versus customizable scenario. If you're going with a company that does this for a living, so to speak, and it's no code, and it's, you know, like I know, for instance, like just off the top of my head for us, like integration. Well, yeah, we do this for the biggest governments in the world and the biggest enterprises in the world. Of course, you know, like off the top of my head, there's like SharePoint, there's Oracle, there's OpenText, there's 365, Google Workspace, GC Docs, SQL Server, IBM File That. Like, you know, like, of course we integrate with those because we have to, and those integrations are already built. If you go back to like what we were talking about before is like this coded scenario, it's like, well, go build those integrations, I guess. Best of luck to you. But again, you're paying for a whole bunch of integrations on stuff that theoretically are already in a platform that already worked. So that integration then falls into like, you know, your CRMs, ERPs, all those kind of things. Here's where it becomes really important, and I think this is like where it puts the stamp on this idea of lean working environments is the unsiloed workflows. And it's, I would love to get your insight on that as kind of like, I'll call it like, you know, the end of this story in how this works, because the unsiloed workflows is really how lean government and lean enterprise comes to fruition, is that you're no longer, you know, well, I've got my workflow over here and we shall never speak to these people in this other department, right? And it's breaking down those barriers and it gets into digital transformation and all those kind of things. Explain that one to me, if you would, as far as the benefit and the horror stories on the other side.
Well, I think, I mean, the benefit is that at the end of the day, you only can make the most valuable decision with respect to any sort of position you have if you have all of the information. And if organizations are siloed because it makes sense to protect it, if organizations are siloed because their workflows are not in tune with like type organizations that need to, or departments within either private sector, enterprise, or government, then they're making a decision based on bits of information as opposed to the whole picture. The challenge there is, how do I give bits of information to a different department in my organization without revealing private, protected portions of information that aren't supposed to be shared, but give enough information to be able to make intelligent decisions based on information that we actually have that is important to share. And so workflow processes can tie in where certain things are done, certain tasks are taken to get to a level, whatever that may be, of a decision, and then I need confirmation from a different department. So whether it's finance talking to HR, whether it's procurement talking to finance, whether it's HR talking to management, I mean, we want to be able to have access to portions of that information so we can have an all-encompassing proper view of the data we have so we can make best decisions without necessarily providing stuff that we would consider to be protected information. So there's a real challenge there in trying to figure out where the product and process and data intermingle or interrelate with each other without breaking a security model, but still giving the bits of information that are important to the right people, the right decision makers, so on and so forth. So that's a real challenge, and we have to be very careful. And the problem is, it's such a fine line. Am I providing too much information? Yes, I am. Okay, then I get a slap in the chops for doing that. If I'm providing not enough information, then we run the risk of being less efficient, less effective, and less understanding of any particular decision we have to make, which ultimately can lead to the wrong decision. I only know 50% of the information I need to have, but I can't get access to it because it comes along with some protected information on the other side. And so, you know, it's like trying to make a decision on a document that you've gotten that is completely redacted except for the date. Okay, that doesn't really help me, you know. Well, yeah, we have to err on the side of caution. Okay, but you took everything out of it. So it becomes really difficult for me to do it. Okay, well, then we won't redact anything. Okay, well, now I have the guy's SIN number. or his birthday, or his phone number, or his, you know, his wife's phone number, whatever it may be. Okay, well, that's probably too far. So where's the balance point? What can we share, not share? What can we work with? How can we do that? Those are all rules set up in a document management platform to alleviate, one, the system under or over-promising, and second, an individual making a bad decision about what should be shared, not shared, because everybody's interpretation will be slightly different. And so in order to maintain consistency, let the document management platform allow or make the decision on what can be shared, not shared, and how that goes across department to department or person to person.
I can't help but think again, like I'm just thinking back to that kind of like best practices thing. And it's like, I know that just as this is something that you and I talk about a lot in the, our own insight, again, into those best practices and the digital transformation world, is that so many of our customers come to us. I think sometimes, you know, like really asking for that help in the sense it's like, we think we know what we want. We think we know how to manage it. But from a consultative perspective, because you guys do this all the time, please help. And that's okay. And I think this also then very much plays into the unsiloing of these workflows and everything that you just talked about. Like, you know, even some of the security protocols and like who gets to see what, if we've discussed before, as far as the, you know, controlled access and all those kind of things. These are all models that we have built configurably for clients for 25 plus years. So this is not new. But I think for those, you know, the listeners, is that, you know, it's having that ability to create, maintain, and especially improve those organizational, like standardized workflows,
yeah,
to streamline your management, collaboration and tracking and blah, 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 it, like all of those things. It's really important to understand that it's, you know, it's a platform that's going to be able to enable that really quickly and easily because, again, those models are kind of pre-built and ready to configure in any such way that you would really want to. I'd say, is that kind of sum it up, Grant? Is that the...
Yeah, that does. That makes perfect sense.
So I think that's our list for today. I hope the listening audience enjoyed it. Now, obviously, I don't expect everybody to be making, you know, they grabbed a pen and piece of paper and wrote down all these in order. With this podcast, please visit our website. This list will actually be available that goes right along with this podcast. You can download the PDF. There are sort of some tips and tricks in there. We also have some great business guides and the like as well on moving towards both lean government, lean enterprise. So please take advantage of those as well. And hopefully that will give you the tools and insight that you can start to make the, you know, the decisions that you want to make in moving towards these more modern times, I guess, as everybody, you know, gets into the lean vibe, I will say. And Grant, right, as always, thank you so much for your time. And until the next podcast.
Thanks, Scott. Well said. And we're looking forward to the next time.
Thanks, everyone.